This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Lead Singer Syndrome. I am your host, Shane Told. Right now, it is my birthday, February 13th. I was born in 1981, so do the math really quick. Yes, it's my 35th birthday, and I am chilling in Las Vegas. I'll be honest, my head doesn't feel super awesome this morning. It's been a bit crazy. We just got here Wednesday night, and it's fun, man. I'm here with my girlfriend and also my best friend and his wife. So, you know, so it's kind of just a crazy party with my best friend and my girlfriend, and I am having a blast. So I found a little time to record this. I didn't want to take the week off. We had two amazing episodes the last 2 weeks with Spencer and Aaron of Under Oath, and today we have a great show again. I sit down with my friend Telly from The Word Alive. Just a great dude, and I've known him since, well, apparently I've known him since he was in his old band, In Fear and Faith, but I don't remember meeting him. We talk a little bit about that. But we did a tour back in 2009, and we have been bros ever since. Recently, Telly went to jump in the crowd, you know, the stage dive, which can be ill-advised, and in his case, it did not go so well. He broke his back fully. And somehow they got through the rest of the tour without canceling any shows. So that was something I really wanted to ask them about. And they got a new album coming out. And The Word Alive, you know, just a really, really great newer band. So yes, it is my birthday. And last week I said, you know, hey, if you want to send me some money or some gift cards. And guess what? Nobody did it. But hey, that's okay. I don't care. But if you do want to send me anything, whether it's related to my birthday or just in general, we're going to set up a Lead Singer Syndrome P.O. box too. And if you guys want the address for that, just email me and I'll send it back to you. And while we're on it, if you want to email me just how you like the show, suggestions for the show, whatever it is, that email address is leadsingersyndrome@gmail.com. Also, we got the hate line, 657-666-HATE. We're going to have a Hate Line episode pretty soon where I roll the clips, so make them good. I really want the hate. I love that shit. All right, so when you're listening to this, Valentine's Day has already passed. Hopefully, you use the Amazon link to buy your significant other a very, very lovely Valentine's Day gift. If you didn't, and you need to buy her a second one, or him, a second one, go to leadsingersyndrome.com/Amazon. And what that does, it pulls up the Amazon homepage. You log in as usual, and anything you buy, 4% of it goes directly to the show, and it costs you nothing. So that's a great way you can support the show. Also, word of mouth goes a long way. Tell your friends, tell your mom, tell your dad. They might even like it. My mom and dad will listen to this. Hey, mom. Hey, dad. So it's all good. In other news, Silverstein going on tour. Silverstein.soundrink.com to get VIP tickets or regular tickets. We're doing pizza parties on this tour for the VIP. It's always a party with Silverstein. We're going out with Being as an Ocean, Amorosa, Cold Rain all the way from Japan, and this awesome new band called Rarity. So it's a great lineup. It's going across Canada and throughout the US. And I believe it starts like February 24th. So very soon. So go get your tickets. Silverstein.soundrink.com. Also, I have a solo project, River Oaks, riveroaksmusic.com. Check that out. And lastly, make sure you're subscribed. Make sure this podcast goes directly to your phone or whatever you listen to podcasts on. And make sure you check us out on social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. We're on all that stuff. Anyways, let's jump into it. I will talk to you after my conversation with Telly Smith of The Word Alive. How's it going, Telly?
It's going really good. How are you, Shane?
dude, good. You don't sound that good. You sound a little like, did you just wake up or something?
No, I've been up for a little while, but you're the first person other than my dog that I have spoken to today, so.
Your dog, Colby Jack. That's
yes.
Right, right?
Yep.
I follow you on social media, so I know all about your pet and your beautiful girlfriend.
Yep.
Yeah, you're kind of the dude. Like, I was talking to Pierre from Simple Plan, and we were talking about him being, like, very private on his social media and stuff. You're totally the opposite.
Yeah. I think a big part of it is, like, I've just always kind of been that way. It's not like Pierre has anything to hide, but, you know, like, some people are just like that. You know, they don't put themselves out there in that way, and that's awesome. And, you know, everybody has that thing that works for them. For me, like, I mean, I have a lot of things that I enjoy that I do, and it would be hard for me to put myself out there and not include, like, you know, the things that make me. So,
yeah, absolutely. I mean, you want to share the things that are in your life with kind of everyone. You want to shout it from the mountaintops.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's beautiful. So where are you right now? Where are you even living?
I live in Los Angeles.
Okay.
So I'm just at home right now and just enjoying my weekend.
That's nice. Very nice. No, I know. I know you grew up in Ohio, but then I think when we met, you were living in like San Diego, and then you were in Vegas for a bit.
Yeah, I've bounced around.
And of course, Arizona too. I know you. I think your band is from Arizona, right? So. What's the story there? Why are you living in so many places?
I mean, I guess just trying to search for what works and where I enjoy living. When I grew up in Ohio, I moved when I was 20, and I moved to Oceanside, so right by San Diego. And that is near the first time we ever met was a long, long time ago, but we didn't really like know each other back then. So that's six.
What did we? What was
almost?
That?
It's almost 9 years ago.
When did we meet?
When I was in a band called In Fear and Faith.
Yes,
and it was just like more so in passing, and I pretty much just like fanboyed a little bit, and I was like, hey man, like huge fan of Silverstein and. You know, just love what you're doing. And you're like, cool, man, cool. And then that was like basically about it. And then we, obviously when I joined The Word Alive and our second tour ever was with you guys.
Yeah.
So, then obviously we got to know each other a little bit more. That was 2009. So 7 years ago.
I can remember that tour very well. It doesn't feel that long ago, man.
It does not. It does not feel that long ago. And I try to explain certain things like tours and stuff like that, sometimes they feel like it was yesterday, but then last week when I was like having lunch with my friend, like I'm like, oh, that was last week. I feel like that was like months ago.
I know, it's so bizarre.
So it's a weird mental trick.
Well, the fucking weirdest thing, and I don't know, I mean, you're a bit of a hard drinking dude. I mean, once in a while.
I can let loose.
So I've decided to go sober for January.
Oh, nice.
And, yeah, kind of nice. And what is it today? Today's the 10th, right? So I've done 10 days now.
Yeah.
And,
how do you feel?
Dude, longest 10 days of my life. Like, but so I'm like, damn, like, cause it was, it had been a week since like New Year's and it's like, holy crap, man. Like time goes by very slow when you're sober. And then I was talking to some other people though, and everybody's kind of saying the same thing. Like, no, it's like just the beginning of the year is always like that. And it's always like, everyone's like, yeah, New Year's feels like so long ago. So, yeah, I don't know. I digress, but,
no, I feel that. I took 2 months off last year.
Oh, good.
And, like September, October, pretty much. And, I felt great. Like I did it for two reasons. Mostly though, was we were going to like Australia, New Zealand, Europe, US all in one run.
Yeah.
And that's, as you know, a lot of flying. And for singers, it's like your nightmare is to go into all those different time zones. Your sleeping schedule's all over the place. but you're just trying to, like, you know, wake up your voice and all that stuff. So I was like, this is about to be a brutal run, and I have had trouble at times getting sick during that time of the year. So okay. I was like, I'm gonna test out this no drinking thing, and I felt great. I didn't get sick once, cool. even though everyone in my band did. So I was like, oh, maybe there's something here.
Maybe.
But I mean, at the end of the day, I really like beer, so I don't think it'll ever be like a permanent thing.
No,
but
it's definitely not a permanent thing for me. I mean, I got my birthday. I got my birthday in the middle of February, and I'm going to like Vegas. It's my 35th birthday. I'm going to Vegas with my best friend, so it's going to be like, I know I'm going to get crazy then. So this is just sort of like knowing that's going to happen, you know. So it kind of averages out to a moderate amount.
Yeah.
But no. But dude, I feel great, man. 10 days in, I feel great, and I feel like month will be easy, like no problem at all. But the first couple days, and I'm sure it was like a little bit in my head too, I was like, damn, dude, I don't know, man. This is like, am I an alcoholic?
Well, and
like, you know, I don't know. What's the definition of an alcoholic? Hey. Maybe I am.
Well, and two, like for me, it's like, you know, when me and my girlfriend, when we're trying to like take it easy for a couple days and kind of recover, you know, it's hard because when your friends are like, hey, like this is going on tonight. You want to come here, or you want to have a drink, or hey, I'm right down the street at like our favorite bar. I know you want to come. And it's just like, damn it. Like even when you're trying to like have those nights, sometimes it just kind of pulls you in. So
it's absolutely true. Well, last night, speaking of which, last night was my best friend's 30th birthday.
Oh,
so I was like the designated driver. Completely sober. I didn't have my whole thing. I'm not even going to have like one drink or one sip of one drink. Like I'm going full on.
And
it was pretty gnarly, dude, like to be there completely stone cold sober when in like 10 years of knowing the guy, I don't think I've ever spent a night with him where we didn't like crack a couple at least. But it was, but you know what? The awesome thing is like I had some great conversations with people that I'm going to actually remember. You know, and it's like, it was actually, I had a lot of fun, you know, and I maybe didn't think I was going to be able to. So it kind of taught me something. So,
yeah.
So it's good.
Well, hell yeah.
You were saying that you went sober because of your voice. Do you find like you have a lot of problems with health and stuff on the road?
Not particularly anymore, but like, and it's nothing that is like drastically affects my singing per se, but it's more like, you know, I'll get a cold, and as you know, it's like you can sing, but you just aren't singing the way you want to, and you know, you just don't have I like to have like total control of my voice, like the multiple tones, the multiple like techniques, and like, you know, just trying to really, you know, put on a memorable show. It's like when you're just drained and you feel like dog shit, and then it's like you got to get hyped up, you know, for the show, then you're just like, sometimes the last thing you want to do is get on stage. And so I just hated feeling that way and run down more than anything else. And so I chose not to, just when we were doing like all the international stuff pretty much.
Yeah.
And then when we got back in the States, obviously that changed. And when I saw you, obviously, in St. Louis, we had a couple, and
yeah, we did.
You know, just things like that. Where like in the States, where you have a lot of friends that you come across through random states, cities, it's like, you know, you want to go out and have a beer or two with your buddy, and you know, I think it's a little different than, you know, when I was like flying everywhere and I'm not seeing anyone I know, so it's just kind of like, eh, whatever.
Sure, man. Well, actually, it's funny you mentioned In Fair and Faith, because I don't think we ever played any shows with In Fair and Faith, like all the different incarnations they had. You know, they had so many different band members and everything. But one thing that I've heard is that In Fair and Faith was like one of the hardest drinking, like partying bands like of all time.
Yes. They,
like,
I mean,
the
they
stories
literally
I heard was like gnarly.
Yeah, I didn't fit in very well. Like, we're all like, well, not all, everyone, you know how it can go with past members and different things like that, but they had a lot, so I won't say everyone gets along, but sure. I was the first one pretty much to leave, and it was because they were going at like such a crazy pace, and I actually broke my ankle like the first day of tour, one tour, and I got pneumonia on the tour, and I stayed, I didn't miss any shows, and I was just like, it was the most brutal tour of my life. We were in a conversion van with like 9 people, and so like I would be laying down just hoping to sleep to get better, and it would just be like a party in the van. And so I was just like, all right, like, you know, I can't sing and do good, you know, if I'm sleeping like 3 hours a night. And they were just young and in a stage where tour was more a means to party than right. It was to like progress musically.
That's and, like what I heard about the band was that pretty much it was like drinking number one, music a distant second.
Yeah. And it's not that they're bad. It was just they love to party. And, you know, right. there's nothing wrong with that, I guess, you know.
Well, this is the Lead Singer Syndrome podcast, so I'm sure like eventually I'm going to have somebody on there that's going to tell me some like fucking, you know, crazy drinking groupie stories. It hasn't happened yet, but...
Yeah, I mean, they wouldn't be far off to have some stories, that's for sure.
That's great, man. So that was like the first band that you joined, right? I mean, you grew up in Ohio.
Yeah.
Let's start from the beginning. Like, so you grew up, what was your upbringing like in Dayton, Ohio? Is that right?
Yeah, I grew up in Dayton, Ohio in a suburb called Kettering, which
We've
is where,
there.
Yeah, you've probably played The Attic.
That Attic. Yeah, it's funny. I was talking to Caleb on the very first podcast about that venue. We couldn't think of the name.
Yep,
and
The Attic.
Like big Christian. Yeah, The Attic. That place is like kind of legendary in that area, isn't it?
Yeah, it was for a long time. Like that's where like Prada really got their start. That's where Hawthorne Heights got like their start.
Yeah.
And John Kilby was the promoter's name, the owner of that venue. And he kind of, you know, he didn't take care of the bands and, you know, wasn't always honest with agents and just different things like that. So he kind of ran it into the ground. I'm surprised it lasted as long as it did with, you know, once I was touring and I learned a little bit more about, you know, settling and how all that stuff works and seeing like some of the loopholes he would find to basically make more money for himself. And it just, you know, it caught up with them and they had to close. But that was like my venue. I went there for a shit ton of shows. And I saw like we're about to play with Zayao from on a So What Fest. They're doing like a reunion.
Yeah,
and
crazy,
I went and saw them and Norma Jean.
That's, you talk about a band with member changes, man. Zayao has the most like ever.
The most ever.
Is it anyone?
I think
the drummer?
Like 13 or 14. It's like a
lot.
The drummer was
the last original member I remember, and I don't even know if he's in the band anymore.
No, well, now they're having this reunion, and I know at least two of the longest standing members are doing it, but I honestly don't even know what lineup they're choosing to reunite as. So, I mean, I'll find out soon enough, but
like, dude, I forgot about Zayao, man. I used to love fucking jam that band, dude.
Yeah.
They were like, I never really thought about this, but they're kind of one of the pioneers of that genre for sure.
Yeah, they were the first band with screaming I ever heard in my entire life. And I was like, I don't know if I hate this or if I love this. I was like, I don't know what this is, but it does something to me. It like makes me feel something that I haven't before. And they actually like got me, you know, into, well, Norma Jean was Ludacris, and then it became Norma Jean. And so I got into them. I got into Deftones and Korn and like that whole wave of stuff where I like discovered like the underground first, and then I was like, okay, there's some mainstream bands that are kind of, you know, like this, a little more polished obviously now, looking back, but you know, to me it was just kind of all like they all fit together. And and then I branched out from there, and I learned about, you know, like Bayside, about Silverstein, about, you know, all these bands that had a little bit more melody to them, but still had, you know, their heavy parts. And sure. I was like, this is like the best of both worlds. Cause I grew up classic rock, and my dad is like a huge, like, Eagles fan, Steve Miller Band, Boston, right. Like just all stuff like that. So I grew up with like that, and I love singing along. That's like what gave me my love of singing, was classic rock. And then my mom listened to like Hootie and the Blowfish, Celine Dion, just like, so that, I mean, but we all sang, like my dad sang all the time. My mom sang all the time. They were both really good singers, but I didn't think of them as singers. I was just like, it was just riding in the car and we would sing.
Yeah.
My dad had a karaoke machine and we would, you know, sing for fun, but I never like thought of it as performing or anything like that. Like, and so some people, you know, they'll ask me like, oh, when did you start singing? I'm like, well, I mean, I've been singing my whole life, but once I realized that it was actually something that people did like professionally and that might be a cool thing to try, it wasn't until I was like 15, 16, where I even started thinking about the possibility of like being in a band myself. So it wasn't until later on, and I didn't even join my first local band until I was 17.
Wow.
And so I got a little bit of a late start on things, but I made up for it quickly. I was in a local band from Dayton called March and Collapse that played with like Prada and like all the big national bands that like came through Dayton. Like we opened up for a bunch of them. And then that's how I met the guys that became Amorosa. They used to be Corsets or Cages before they signed to Rise. And they actually took me on my first tour ever. And I drove, I did merch, and I was trying to learn the guitar parts to become the second guitar player, because they had recently lost someone and they just wanted like a friend who would, you know, play the parts. And so I went out on tour with them. I quit my job. I dropped out of school and or college, and that was March of 2007. And right. I loved it. Like, I loved being on tour, but they at the time were going through some lineup changes themselves, and you know, they lost their singer Chris, and they didn't know if the band was even going to continue. And I was like, well, I just dropped out of college, I quit my nice paying job, like, and I was like, I want to keep making music. So I packed everything music related in a suitcase and put it all in my car, and I drove to California to try to like make it in the industry.
And that was when you met up with In Fear and Faith.
Yeah,
because I like looking at your history, it really seems like you were just this desperate kid from Ohio that was like willing to do anything to be, you know, like in a band.
There's like pieces of it that like felt that way, but like for me, I always had like, it was just like a goal. It's like, this is what I knew I wanted to do. So it was just like, okay, well, there's nothing left for me here in Ohio. I have to leave.
Yeah.
And the best opportunity that I saw that I thought that I would be good for was In Fear and Faith. So I drove out all the way across. I didn't even tell my family. I didn't say goodbye to anyone. Not my girlfriend, not my parents, well, my mom was already in California, 'cause she had moved out there. But I didn't say goodbye to anyone. I just left, because I'm the kind of person, like, family is like my soft spot. So if I would have like talked to them, like maybe one of them would have talked me out of it.
Right.
So
that's what I totally was going to ask you.
Yeah.
That was
so
the reason.
I was like, I just got to go. And so I called my dad and my brothers like once I was there, and I was like, oh, I think I'm going to be out here for a couple weeks. I just needed a break to get away from things. And it ended up, I didn't come home for like a year and a half, but I went out with In Fear and Faith and we did an EP. I had, you know, that bad experience, and I was like, well, I'm just not the kind of person that just does something because I want to do it. Like, if I'm not happy, then I'm not going to keep doing it. So I was like, well, this isn't for me. I'm sure someone else would love to be in this position, but this isn't for me. So I left the band. And then, like, at the same time, I actually was getting hit up by the manager of, what band was it?
Greeley Estates?
Greeley Estates, yeah. And he was having me try out, though, first for Bless the Fall. And
oh, really?
Yeah. And
okay, that's really interesting because actually this week, I guess, well, I don't know when this is going to go on, but the next episode of this show was with Bo from Bless the Fall.
Oh, yeah.
So that's super, super interesting that you were also trying out for that band, because he explains how that whole thing went down for him.
So. Yeah, it's this would have been almost 2 years before, no, maybe a year before Bo ended up joining, because Jared took over just like screaming, and then Eric did all the singing, and then they had a couple.
My idea to do that,
because
really? They were on tour with us, and I just explained this to on the Bo podcast, but we were on tour in Europe, and Craig Mabbitt left, mm-hmm. And fucked off, and. Part of it was that I was being selfish because we wouldn't have a support band if they went home, and I was like, Jared, you know, you can scream, Eric, you can sing, you know, and I thought they actually might even continue that, doing that moving forward, and then they were kind of like, nah, let's be real, we need like a real singer, so I know they auditioned like 50 people or something.
Yeah,
they auditioned
a bunch of people, and I was like. Close in like the running for things, but it's funny because they liked, you know, my singing, but I couldn't really scream, and they had just come from having Craig who could do both, and at first they were really like dead set on like the whoever it is has to do both, and which, you know, understandable, and so I didn't get it, but Bo still wasn't in the picture yet, so they had gone, they were just going through stuff. And they were leaning more towards, I can't remember who it was, but some other guy from Texas. And so I ended up, the manager was like, well, hey, like, I've seen you in In Fear and Faith Live. You obviously tried out for this. Greeley Estates is looking for a bass player who can sing. And I heard that you can play like guitar and stuff. And I was like, yeah, I can. And he was like, well, would you be interested in going to Arizona? And trying out for them. And my tryout was I had to learn 16 songs in like 8 days or something like that. And cause they were about to have a headlining, CD release show, and they didn't have bass player.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God. So, and I hadn't played like guitar much for about a year and a half before that, or let alone, and I never played bass. I'd never played bass before in my life. And so I sold a bunch of shit, bought a bunch of bass gear, and I learned to the best of my abilities. I somehow pulled it off, and it was, the singing was like the common denominator of all of this. Like
right.
The singing was like what they were like, okay, well, you can definitely sing. And no offense to, you know, bass players like yours and mine, you know, everyone's integral and, you know, the sound of a band. But their mentality was, it's just bass. If you miss a couple notes or you don't get it, like as long as you sing good, no one will notice.
Right.
And,
well, yeah. I mean, the funny thing about that is next to the drummer, like stopping playing, I think the bass is the most obvious.
Yes.
You know,
oh,
like if you're 100%. Watching a band and all of a sudden the bass player stops playing or whatever, you're just like, what the fuck happened? Like, is did the PA like stop
yeah.
working?
Yeah, you feel it, you hear it, you sense the power just gets sucked out.
Yeah.
So it was funny that they had that mentality, because now, you know, like I was saying, like I don't believe that. You know, now when Daniel's playing bass for us, if his bass goes out, I'm just like, son of a bitch. Like,
oh,
and
yeah,
it kills
the vibe.
Yeah, and I follow a lot of bass stuff with like my melodies, because it's just kind of like the heart of the song, and so that's like where I kind of subliminally focus on, especially
yeah.
since the guys play a lot of lead stuff. It's like for me, like the bass really, like pulls everything together.
Well, yeah. Well, the bass is playing the root note, right?
Yeah.
So I've heard a lot of singers do that, like listen to the bass, you know, to kind of find their notes more so than the guitars, which does make sense. Yeah.
Yeah. So
so you joined this band not ever playing bass in your life. You literally sold some shit to get bass gear. And
yeah.
So I'm going to go back to that other question. Like, you definitely were like desperate to be in a band.
Yeah.
You know,
like I knew it was what I wanted to do. And I was just searching for, I guess, the right one, you know, like the perfect fit for me. And I loved being in Greeley. So to this day, I love those guys. We talk, like I see Ryan when I go, the singer, when I go to Arizona.
Yeah, I know them very well. Ryan's a great dude.
And you know, just it was the easiest band I've ever been in. Like there was never one time, no one ever got in a fight the entire time I was in the band. No one like disrespected someone else. Everyone was just like very much like friends first, and then everything came after that. And
those dudes are pretty old, man.
Yeah, like they were older.
They're older than we are.
Yeah, yeah. Ryan now, he's getting pretty up there. But he doesn't look it. He looks just as young, if not younger than us. He always has been that guy.
Well, really funny thing about that band quickly, we first time we ever played Arizona, this was in 2003, I guess. And Greeley Estates were like the local band on the show.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to say anything bad about them, but they were like horrible. like they were really, really bad.
Yeah.
Like they didn't know, it was like they didn't know how to play, you know?
Yeah.
And they kind of had the aesthetic and whatever, and like the kids didn't seem to notice, but I was like, man, this band is not good at all. So, you know, hung out with them, super nice guys. And they gave me like a CD, which I think I have, which they probably would never want to see the light of day. And I remember talking to them, and they like were basically like, yeah, we met in college.
Yeah.
Whatever Arizona college, and we just like started playing guitar. Like, so they're like, yeah, like I just learned to play guitar like 6 months ago.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But it was really funny to me because they had this mentality like, we're going to do it and we know what to do. And they definitely had the aesthetic. And then like fast forward, I mean, 2 years maybe, I started hearing about them and I was like, that's crazy that this same band, this like awful local band actually is decent and actually is, you know, doing stuff.
Yeah.
And it's like a real testament. It's like that kind of fake it till you make it, you know, idea.
Coming like full circle with them, I played with them in 2007 or no 2006 with my local band. We opened up for them. So I met them years before I ended up actually meeting them and like trying out for them. And I reminded them of the show and they like remembered the whole show and everything. I can't remember. I think it might have been in Kentucky, but it was at this venue that was an old film theater and it had like seats in it and they would play like horror movies on the screen while the bands were playing. And it was just this little, maybe like 300 cap venue. Really grimy, sound was horrible, but it was like the kids went crazy and were like jumping off chairs and stuff.
Yeah.
And so like we had like that, this sort of connection. And I've always, even though I was younger, I think I was 21 or 22, I was 21, I think, when I joined Greeley. I've always been kind of like a little bit of, not an older soul, but like I've always fit in more with people older than me than younger than me. And so even though I was the young one in the band and the new guy, I really related to them in a lot of ways because they weren't really like party, but they were like, let's get drunk, but just like as dudes going to a bar, have fun and come back. It wasn't like, let's invite a ton of girls, let's get, you know, fucked up and not even be able to play a show tomorrow. It was just like, have a really good time and enjoy, like, you know, hanging out with your boys. So
right. So I guess after In Fear and Faith, though, I mean, anything would have been
very tame. Yeah, very
tame. Yes.
And so, I mean, we had a great time. Played Warped Tour for the first time ever. This is 2008. We went out on tour with one of my favorite tours was with August Burns Red, and that fall. And so, while I was on Warped Tour, though, I get a call from Mike, who used to be in Bless the Fall, and he was like
Mike Frisbee. Yeah,
and so he. We had practiced, Greeley and Blessed Fall practice in the same practice studio in Arizona. And so they heard me, you know, like singing and jamming with Greeley. And they, when they said no to me, they judged it off of a recording that I had done in California.
Oh.
And so when they heard me singing live, like with Greeley at practice, and we got to know each other and we were hanging out and became friends.
Uh-huh.
They were like, we want you to join the band. Like I used to have a cell phone with it that, you know, I still have the text from Mike that he was like, if you fly home from Warped Tour right now, you will be in Bless the Fall. And I was like, dude, like, I love you guys. Like singing is where my heart is and what I want to do. I can't just quit in the middle of a tour. Like I was like, I can't.
Right.
And I had never done Warped Tour before. So it was like a huge accomplishment for me to go from the first national band I ever played in 20. And a year later I'm on Warped Tour and, you know, we were doing very well. And so it was just kind of like a whirlwind year and a half for me. And I was like, I can't do it. And he was like, well, we have to fill the spot. And so he's like, it's pretty much like now or never. And I was like, I just can't do it. And like 3 or 4 days later, Bo tried out and Bo, you know, unanimously got the spot. And it was a perfect fit for them. And I'm glad that I didn't, because that led me to meeting the guys, or Tony and Zach from The Word Alive.
Yeah.
And that's, it was at the time, especially, it was like much more like up my alley of like what I really like. When I heard The Word Alive for the first time, I was like, this is rad. I was like, this is different. This feels fresh. Like there's something here that like, it gives me that feeling of when you discover a band for the first time that you really like. And so I was just like, this is awesome. And then maybe a couple months after that, at the tail end of the August Burns Red tour, Zach hit me up and was like, hey, we need a singer. The guys want you to try out, just if you're interested. And I tried out, and I had, you know, let Greeley know, and it's kind of an unfortunate situation. I stepped down from Greeley like 2 days before we left for tour. But I already, the guy who was battling me to join the band, he already knew all the same songs. He actually is like an amazing guitarist and bass player and just all around musician. And he was like, I'll fill in for you at the very least. Like if they really, you know, enjoy me on tour, then who knows? Like he really wanted to be in Greeley, and they were going like way heavier, as you know, everyone found out later on. But I knew when I quit that they were becoming pretty much like almost like a death metal band. And so I was like, I want to sing. So this just isn't for me. And
but The Word Alive, but that's interesting. Cause The Word Alive, I mean, is, were you screaming at all at this point?
No, I couldn't really scream at all. And I learned how to scream. It's kind of the fake it till you make it thing. I faked my way through screaming. It, because their PA system where I tried out was so bad that you kind of could, and I got the spot. And then it wasn't until we went to record the first demo in The Word Alive that they were like, I thought you could scream. And I was like, no, I can't. And, and I had already tracked all the singing. And so it was like, we were already in there. And so we're doing the song, and this is for Fearless to potentially get signed. and they're like, are you fucking kidding me? Like they wanted to kill me. But Tony was like really patient, and he was like, hey, like, I believe that you can figure this out.
Right.
The producer said, you have 2 days, like, go learn how to scream, pretty much. And I was like, okay, I've tried to scream for years. Literally from the time I first heard like heavy music, I tried to like scream in my car. I couldn't. I blew out my voice in the first like 30 seconds, almost always. Just like so many fans tell me nowadays. And I'm like, yep, right. I was there. I know exactly what you feel like. But it was just, I went into the practice space with Tony, and as silly as it sounds, he just played a shit ton of like breakdowns over and over again. And I just like kept trying things, and I kind of stumbled across it. And he was like, that. He was like, do that again. And I did it. And then I just, the rest is history. I just like learned
how.
But that's also why I struggled so much early on in our career with singing and like maintaining my singing voices, because I was actually learning how to scream the whole time. Like every show was like me trying to figure it out more and more. And, you know, now I can scream without losing my voice. But back then it was just like I was just thrown into touring full time and not really knowing what to do yet. And
right.
It was
well,
a struggle.
That's something we have in common. I mean, we're both guys that do, you know, a fair share of screaming and singing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was the same way, actually. I started out as a singer, completely singer. I didn't think I could scream either until, you know, even the first Silverstein demos, I didn't really know how to scream at all. It was kind of like a weird yell I would do.
Mm-hmm.
It sounded terrible. And then when we got Neil, who's, you know, Neil, our old
yeah.
guitar player, he came into the band with like a more of a metal thing, more of a metal influence.
Mm-hmm.
And there's actually my first scream ever that I ever did in my life is recorded on a cassette tape, because we had this song. It's like na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na. And then there, I let it rip, and it was like the first one I ever did.
That's
and
sick.
So it's funny, but it's true. Like it was kind of like it was screaming, and I try to tell people this. It's like, because you know, I'm sure it's the same with you, but kids ask me all the time, like, "How do you do it?" And I'm like, "I don't really know." And it's like, mm-hmm. it's just this sort of thing that like it clicks, and then it's there.
Yeah, exactly.
And then once you find that like. That thing, you can kind of start manipulating it, and you know, and then now I'm like, yeah, I can do like a lower one or a higher one or whatever, but like it's finding that first place. Would you agree
yep.
with me? That's kind of what it
completely.
Is.
Completely. That's exactly what it is. And it's like, it is kind of like singing, but I view it more as like, it's like when you're a baby and you like have to learn to talk, and then you put words to it, and then you understand pitch, and you know, you yell louder, you yell softer, you just like understanding your voice. Well, screaming is kind of the same way as talking or singing, to where you can work out that muscle and sing higher, sing a little lower,
yeah.
sing more aggressively, you know, whatever the case may be. Screaming is the same way. Like, I started where I could do pretty much just like almost a monotone, like kind of what most people consider is like a mid-range scream. That's like all I could do. So mm-hmm. Empire and Deceiver, our first two releases, I do anything that's like mids, and then Zach would do like lows and highs. And then we would like kind of like mix those in, so it gave the perception of more range and depth to the screaming. And then, but I was the whole time like practicing, working, trying to figure out like, how the hell do you scream high? Like, and how do you scream super low? Like, and it wasn't because I like wanted to particularly sound like something. Once I start something, I just want to figure it out to the best of my abilities. And so I was just like, okay, well, there's things that other people are doing that I can't do, so I want to learn how to do that because it sounds cool. And that's just where you take it from there. It's just, you have to find that starting point of what works for you, and then just keep pushing it, expanding it, you know, and just experimenting with your mm-hmm. voice. And it's a fun process. It's a frustrating process. Because I would have like months where I wasn't doing anything different. And then all of a sudden, one day, something would happen almost on accident. And I'd be like, oh, that's how I make that sound or do that. And then it clicks. And then
it's true.
You just keep going.
Yeah. Well, I mean, my scream has evolved too. I mean, you know, our first record, I don't even know what's going on. Like, my scream is kind of hilarious sounding, you know, and it's evolved over time. And I think that's okay, you know, my singing has too. And yeah, that's cool. Were you worried when you started screaming that your singing voice would suffer? Because I mean that was and maybe still is kind of where your real, you know, passion lies.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, especially when I was losing my voice, like it was very disheartening to say the least. And you know, when the guys would be frustrated with me or like bummed out and I didn't sing good for a show, I would really take it to heart. And especially being early on touring, like I had toured before, but no one else in the world alive had before they joined. So they didn't really understand quite yet that touring is hard, and touring in a van for, you know, being a singer. And if you drive all night long and you don't sleep, that the next day you're just not going to sound as good. And it's, you know, that's something that we learned later on. And luckily the guys all figured out and respected, you know, the boundaries of what I could and could not do off stage that also helped my voice. And they've always, you know, been supportive of that since then. But early on, I mean, it was, I would go on stage with zero confidence because I knew that either I didn't have a voice or I was going to lose it. And it was, you know, it was very, very frustrating for me, especially when our second tour ever, we were with you guys and you were killing it every night. And the band's pretty much just like, well, Shane's doing it. Why can't you do it?
And, shit. Sorry, dude.
Yeah, dude. What the fuck? But it's like, that's just growing pains of being in a band that everyone's relatively inexperienced. You know, you're going to go through that now there is a point where there was things I was doing that were hurting my voice that I wasn't even aware of yet. You know, like I would talk on the phone too much. I would, on nights where I wasn't driving even, I would stay up late, and just a bunch of things that were just collectively deteriorating my voice.
Right.
And I
you don't smoke, right?
No, I don't smoke. I used to.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, and I stopped for also for the old voice.
Good. Yeah, no, I remember, like, I'm old enough now. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people that are younger and stuff will think this is so ridiculous, but, like, I come from the era where most venues, like, you could smoke.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, that was so horrible for me, like, for singing. And occasionally, even though it's 2016 now, there are still sometimes you'll run into a venue where you're like, really? You can fucking smoke in here?
Yeah, especially in Europe.
I find Europe's way better now. Europe used to be horrible, though. Like back in, I remember even as late as like 2007 or 2008, I remember there's still like smoking venues in Germany and stuff, but not really anymore. I mean, like Russia, yeah.
Yeah.
But like occasionally, like I think there's some places in Florida you can still smoke, which is always funny to me because it's like the one place where you can actually go outside and it's not cold or anything. You know, they're the people that want to stay inside to smoke. It doesn't make any sense to me. But anyways, whenever I run into a venue where they have smoking, I'm just like, oh God, this is my nightmare. Cause it ruins me.
Yeah. Luckily I figured out maybe like 2 years ago that if you're headlining, especially, and there is that, like if it's before the show, we just tell them that they have to put no smoking signs up and not allow it. Cause I just won't. I mean, I will. It's not like we cancel shows if they're smoking, but like I just refuse to not try to get smoking cut because it does. It fucks you up. And early on, the guys didn't understand that either. But now, even for them, they're like, "Yeah, but it fucking sucks." Like, why?
Well, now people were used to it. You know, like it was used. I mean, fuck. I remember at the mall, like you used to smoke in the mall.
Yeah.
And you'd walk in the mall, it would be smoky, and like no one even batted an eye. Now it's like the second you're in a venue and someone lights up, like it's just like, what is that? Oh God, it's horrible.
Yeah.
It's like so fucking weird. But we were doing the sign thing as well, and we did it in Germany once. And so they put up the signs that we told the promoter, and they put up the signs in German, and we didn't understand what it said. But I guess it said, "No smoking due to the Silverstein singer having allergies." But I didn't know it said that, right?
Yeah.
And apparently people were like, fuck this fucking diva, you know? And Josh told me he literally saw somebody take the poster off the wall, light it on fire, and light a cigarette with it.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, so and then I found out what it said, and I was like, "Oh man, like, what are you doing to me, man?
It's yeah, just
like,
you're making just me look me bad." Under the bus.
Oh, okay, it's my fault. Yeah.
But, oh, that's good.
Yeah, those were the days, man.
Yeah.
But I mean, talking about all we're talking about is like the hardships of our careers. But I mean, I really want to ask you about your recent injury where you fully broke your back, didn't you?
Yeah, I broke my L2, my L3 vertebrae. I broke two ribs, and I bruised my left lung stage diving, of all things. And a lot of people thought, because there was some video, people thought that I hurt it doing a backflip. And I had some comments, you know, on some of the shitty websites that there are. There was like, finally, I knew it would catch up with that dude. And I'm like, that's not actually how I even got hurt. We were playing Fox Theater in Pomona. Awesome venue. It was a great tour, huge show, like almost 2,000 people. And I was just super hyped, you know. It's Pomona, so we have like label out, management, booking agents, my friends, because I live here, and you know, my girlfriend, like just her family, everyone that I would ever want to play a show in front of and kind of show off for was like,
yeah,
there.
So you're revved up.
Oh, the juices were flowing. And and so last song, and I go to the back of the stage and I run. And I jumped off of our risers, and I went as far and as high as I could possibly go. And as I'm starting
barricade,
to fall,
over the barricade?
Oh yeah, way way past that. It was like the barricade was like 6 feet. There was a dude crowd surfing on his back that was almost 6 feet tall, and I landed past him. Yeah. And so it was like a giant
some
leap
Carl
of
Lewis
faith.
Shit right there.
Yeah, yes. Exactly. And, yeah, I would have won some Olympic medals for sure. and like it happened like so fast, but it felt so slow to me because I jump, I look, I see hands like about to catch me, except for one dude, like kind of tucked to his left and put his like arm and elbow up to brace the impact.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm going to hit the elbow. Like, I'm going to land on this dude's elbow. And I tried to, like, twist, and it hit my lower left back. And it just instantly sent, like, spark. Like, I literally, if you talk to someone who's, like, broke their back or their neck or something, it's like Raiden from Mortal Kombat. Like, that's how my eyes looked. Like, I just saw, like, a spark of, like, lightning, like, went through, like, and I went numb in my arms and my legs, and I was just like, I had the wind knocked out of me, obviously.
Right.
And I was just like thinking to myself, and I was like terrified. I'm like, did I just fucking get paralyzed? Like, am I paralyzed right now from like the neck down? I was like,
yep.
From stage diving. Like, and I was just like, my life is over. And it was like, I was caught. So I was like on top of kids and they're like carrying me around. And I was just like, to this one a really big fan of ours who's always tries to catch me, but his name's Gabriel. And he's like 6'5", like huge dude. And I was just like, help me. Just like
you couldn't even say anything because you were like wind knocked out of you. Yeah, yeah.
And he could just see it in my eyes, and he like helped me to the front. But as I'm like coming to, like the feeling started coming back and I could move, and I was like, okay, like, well, I'm not paralyzed. I was like, that just hurt really bad. And so I actually got back on stage, finished the song, but like into the song, when if you watch the live footage, like the show stops and it cuts off, like right after that happened, I just like fell to the ground. And because I like moved a certain way, and it just like my back gave out. And I was just like, what the fuck? I was like, that I really hurt my back. And I went to the green room upstairs, and I just like laid on my back, and I was just like catching my breath. And I was just like, man, that was not cool. And,
no, dude. Yeah. Well, I mean, people don't understand how much adrenaline you get when you're performing, to where it's like, you know, it doesn't matter what your injury is. You somehow can get through it.
Yeah.
You know, like I've had, you know, nothing, I've never broken anything, knock on wood, but I've had like some pretty bad injuries too, where I've like can't believe I finished the set, because afterwards I was like, I can't even walk. I can't even move.
Mm-hmm.
And so yeah, dude, but you're super lucky.
Oh, I mean, I've been saying it, and it was even my feelings of being, you know, super lucky and fortunate were just compounded by the fact that I found out I broke my back like 2 days later, because I was just like, okay, this is not just like a really bad bruise. This is something else. And I went and I found out I broke my back, and literally like the next day is when the ghost inside got hit by semi. And I instantly was like, okay, I have nothing to complain about. I can walk. I'm going to be fine in a few months.
Oh, man.
And I was like, those dudes, some of them have it so much worse than I do. So it was just like instantly, like I didn't even have time to like feel sorry for myself, because I was just like instantly reminded of the fact that I would be able to walk again normal, that I didn't have to go through like rehab to relearn how to walk or anything like that. And just like how much worse it could have been. And so I was just like, shit.
Do you think, I mean, the biggest thing is that you kept going, like you broke your back and you guys didn't cancel any shows.
Yeah.
Was that partly to do with the fact that the Ghost Inside had that happen and you were like, well, I'm still here? Did that factor in, do you think?
It definitely, like what I told the guys, because I went obviously to the hospital and I told them, I'm like, is this something where I need to like fly home? Like, am I in danger of, you know, paralyzing myself, of pinching a nerve, something? And they were like, well, so the breaks that I have were like completely clean horizontal breaks, which is like the best thing.
Yeah.
And because a vertical break would not have been able to do anything but lay down in a bed for months. But a horizontal, it's calcifying because they're being, the bones being pushed back together naturally. So that's another way that I was lucky in itself. And, but the doctor said, as long as you don't run, jump, do anything that's like going to risk further damage. He's like, if you're literally just walking on stage and you're singing and then you walk back off and you're laying down, he's like, technically, yes, you can. I don't advise it. But I was like, okay, sure. Well, as long as I can stand there and not do anything, like, I'll try. And
yeah.
And I tried. I did. I had done two shows after I broke my back, where before I found out I did. And then so before the third one is where I, like, didn't move at all. And I pretty much was like,
I can't even believe you were able to sing. Like, didn't you say something? You had like a bruised lung or something?
Yeah, I bruised my lung and broke two ribs.
How are you even able to take a breath? Like, I've had minor back pain, like where I've just sort of, like, I actually just happened to last European tour. I just sort of twisted the wrong way, like kind of awkwardly, and I kind of like tweaked something in my back. And for like 2 days, I found it hard to take like a full breath to sing. Like, it hurt. So I can't imagine how it felt for you to actually breathe. And, you know, you're not just like, you're not singing like soft shit.
Like,
know, you're screaming, you're singing, you're doing all this stuff. I can't even believe you were able to. Did you have some drugs you were taking, like painkillers at least?
Yeah, I had.
So that was helping.
I had painkillers and muscle relaxers, which definitely helped.
Yeah.
And, but I mean, it was definitely like really painful, but that was where the Ghost Inside like kind of like played a little bit into that, more so than just the physical, like choosing to play, was just the like fighting through that, you know, because it was just like, this is temporary. It's going to be better. And it was bad, but fortunately, like, I'm not trying to sound like a badass, because I'm not, but I have a pretty high pain tolerance. Like, I just always have. I broke a lot of bones in my life, like whether it was playing sports or skateboarding or doing BMX jumps. Like, I always was super active. I've been stabbed, fell out of a tree. I've been punctured like in my like side. Like, I've had a lot of injuries before. Like, and
who stabbed you?
My brother.
Oh, Jesus.
It was long story short, it was when we were younger and we were like playing like Peter Pan, but with butcher knives. And we got a little too into it, and he stabbed me like right in the chest. Like, but he hit like right on my breastplate, which is like, you know, the best spot, I guess he could have.
Oh my God. How old were you?
Like 8 or 9. And so we were more worried about all the blood that was like in the kitchen floor and my mom getting mad at us.
How fucked up is that, right? When you're a kid? How much that factors in?
Yeah, we're like, we're going to get so grounded for the blood. Like, we weren't even thinking about like the fact that my brother stabbed me with a knife. It was more about like, we got to clean this up. Don't tell mom. And we tried to, but I got like stitches in my chest, and you know, my mom was just like, not mad, but she was just like horrifically like scarred that that could have even happened. And she was like upstairs.
When you become an adult and you kind of like understand a little more like what your parents, you know, what they went through.
Yeah.
You sort of understand like when they're mad, like it's way different than when you're bleeding and you might die. Like, they're not mad anymore. They're fucking scared.
Yeah, they're terrified.
That's, you know, that's the thing. So all of a sudden when you're a kid, you're like, oh, mom's not mad. Oh, she's scared. And when you see your parents scared when you're a kid, there's nothing more scary than that.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And because I've had multiple injuries, I've seen that look more my mom. My dad's, he's super old school. Like, he, kind of crazy story, but he slipped and fell mowing the lawn when I was like 3 or 4, and his part of his foot got cut off by the lawnmower.
Oh, Jesus.
And he literally just got up and he was like, Lisa, that's my mom's name. He's like, can you drop Tyler off next door? We got to go to the hospital. I cut part of my foot off. Like, literally just like that. Just like, had my mom had to go and like get his like toes out of the yard so that they could like sew stuff back on.
Ugh.
And he was just like super calm. And I guess my whole life seeing my dad go through things like that, where he was just always calm when he got hurt. Just that's like one of the things I guess he passed on to me of like,
you've got some like robot genes or something.
I guess like
that is a crazy story.
And like, you know, it's just like,
it's just the shock. That's wow.
I mean, and maybe that's part of it. Like, maybe, you know, the shock and adrenaline. I mean, when you get injured, it is true that like your body sends like basically all this, it's like the equivalent of adrenaline, but it's to shock all the nerves around your injury to make your body feel like you're not as injured as you are.
Yeah.
And it's just like a natural thing, which is also why like I played a show, and when I went to the hospital, the doctor was like, you actually are going to be in worse pain about a week from now than you are right now. And I was going to be off tour when that happened. So he was like, once your body, like once that thing wears out in your body, he's like, that's when you're actually going to feel like how bad it is. But he was like, you're going to be at home on your bed with painkillers. He's like, if you want to, he's like, you won't feel anything. But he was like, just be aware of that. So,
well, that's the thing, like, too. I mean, whenever I'm sick, I always feel like if I lay around in bed and I mope around and I'm like, you know, don't change it, like I stay in my pajamas all day, I always feel worse than if I just get out. And it's and what we call it in our camp is, we call it, you got to show your body who's boss.
Yeah. Oh, dude,
and
it's so
really
true.
Is a thing. Like, if you get up and you know, you take a little walk and you do some normal things, it's like, it's partly psychological, but I think it's also, you know, physical too, in that like, you know, you're kind of getting the blood flowing around and it's better.
Yeah. Oh, but I definitely completely believe in that, because I use that on tour, like where I just like keep going and play shows and show after show. And then sometimes when I get home from tour and I can relax, that's when I'll get sick. And then vice versa, like when I'm home and I feel like that, I'm the one who gets up. My girlfriend's more the other side, where like she'll lay in bed for a few days and I'm like, you feel terrible. We have the same thing right now. I was like, just get up, drink some water, like let's go, like get some fresh air.
Different.
Yeah, and they are, and they handle things the way that, you know, they need to and want to. And but I'm totally the type of person that when I'm sick, like, I don't want to just lay around being sick. I want to try to fight off whatever it is, for sure.
So moving forward with all your, you know, you got a new record coming out.
Yeah.
You're going to be doing lots of touring, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. Has this, like, are you thinking about kind of changing your ways a little bit when you get back out there? Or do you think it's going to kind of wear, like, the memory will fade and it'll wear off and you'll be like the old Telly again?
I mean, there's certain things that I'll do again that are technically risky. But I think just being more mindful of, like, when I'm choosing to do these things. Like, for instance, when I did this stage dive, it was on a support tour where, you know, we were playing with Motionless and White. They have a much different fan base at times.
Right.
And also Prada, you know, who has a little bit older fan base. And then there's ours, you know. So, like, it was all divided up. So if we're headlining and I'm feeling it and the crowd knows what I do because there are fans, I'm not going to sit here and say I never will do something like that again, but I will never do it, like, depending on the type of crowd, I guess.
Yeah, I understand that. Totally. Totally, man. Like, there's times when we've done support tours too, where you, like, look in the front row and the, like, people in the very front couldn't give a fuck, like, who you are.
Yeah.
Because they were there, they were, like, the first people in the room, that's why they're in the front, and they're waiting for the headliner, and that's, they don't, you know, and they've been getting pummeled by, like, three bands before us, you know, with moshers and stage divers and everything, so I totally get it, and you know, and me throwing my body out there, like, no good can come of it, but yeah, I get
exactly
that vibe. That's good. No, I think as we get older, we realize there start to be some limitations and some consequences to our actions too. And I mean, that's the other thing. Like, you're lucky you didn't hurt anybody else, you know?
Yeah. That was the first thing that I thought about, was like, when I found out how bad it was, I was like, what if I would have done that to a fan? Having it happen to me is one thing, because I'm like, I caused this, I chose to do it. But if I would have done that, that kid or fan or whoever, like, they didn't go to that show, like, signing up to get a giant body, like, dropped on them. So it's like, even though that stuff happens, it's like, and you're aware that it could happen to you as a showgoer, it's not something that, like, if it does happen to you and you break your back because some idiot jumps off stage like I did, then that you're going to be cool with that. You know, it's like, you're going to be, like, scarred as far as, like, going to certain shows and seeing certain things, and I would feel horrible to take away that, like, kind of naive, like, where you can just go and enjoy a show and you're carefree, like, after that, you know, because I'm going to always be aware of, like, my back now. I'm always going to have that in the back of my mind of, like, okay, certain things I'm just not going to do or try.
Well, the other thing too is like now that you've had this injury, like, you don't want to re-injure it too.
Yeah, exactly.
You have to be careful. So, dude, cool. Well, so you got a new song. I just listened to it.
Yeah, Trapped.
Trapped, yeah. And it's out. And I think people can check out the, it's like, it's not a lyric video. It's just sort of like a cool little ambient thing.
Yeah.
But the song's on iTunes. Do you have anything to say about the song? Like, what's, I was getting almost like a Deftones vibe a little bit.
I mean, I love that you say that. I've heard, like, multiple different things, and almost everything I've heard, I'm, like, stoked to be compared to some of the bands that we're getting compared to. But I mean, with this whole album, it doesn't all sound like Trapped. Like, every song doesn't sound like that. But we just tried to make, like, an album of songs that, or almost like the songs we wish, you know, our favorite bands would make, kind of a thing. Like, we wanted to make stuff that we love to play, to listen to, that we also felt our fans would love. And, you know, we just wanted to think about the songs we would potentially be playing for another 7 years. And, you know, trying to just think ahead instead of just, like, only in the moment or what has been. Like, we didn't write anything on the record based off of what we've been or done. It's all, like, looking forward of what we want to do and what we want to be.
Cool.
So I'm stoked.
And when does the record come out?
Great. March 18th is when the album Dark Matter drops.
Dark Matter on Fearless Records.
Yeah.
Awesome, dude. Yeah. Well, you guys got some big tours coming up around there too. Still working on it, or is it all ready to go?
Yeah, we have a CD release tour, the Dark Matter tour, February 19th to March 20th. We do like that So What Fest with Under Oath doing their reunion.
We'll
run.
Be there.
Are you guys playing that show?
Yeah, we're playing the Under Oath Day.
Oh, same.
There we go. Samesies.
Yeah, I haven't even had a chance to review the line because we've been like full like new song and album mode.
Oh yeah, I get it. No, it's been a hell. And to be honest, I didn't know you guys were playing either. But it's a hell of a lineup and hell of a show. And like Under Oath is, man, like what a great band. I'm so excited to see them again.
Yeah, I'm glad that they're doing it with Aaron and they're just the whole thing. It's gonna feel right. Like I think they're gonna get on stage and I've toured with those guys now and you become friends with them and I think they're gonna remember how good it feels to just play songs that thousands of people love to hear every single night. And I really hope the best for them.
Absolutely, dude. Cool. One last question.
Yeah.
Where's the name Telly come from?
That
I know your name is Tyler, but how did that translate?
So that first band I talked about, that first local band, when I joined them, their drummer, his name is Tyler also. And so they're like, well, we got to give you a nickname because this is getting too damn hard to tell you guys apart. So we were at practice. They were trying to come up with a name and I got a cell phone call and the bass player was like Telly, but with a E. Literally, that was it. And I was like, I don't know, that sounds kind of girly. And but everyone just kept calling me that and it just like kind of stuck. And when I moved out to California, I tried to like drop it and go back to just being Tyler. But I had already made enough of a name for myself that I'd be like Tyler and they'd be like, huh? And I'd be like, Telly? And they're like, oh yeah. So I was just like, damn it. Like no one's going to ever remember Tyler. Like that everyone knows like multiple Tylers. And I was like, but no one that I know of has the name Telly. So it just stuck. And
does
now
about your parents?
Probably. I know it does. I know it did my mom for a long time. But more so because we were at a show one time that she came out to and she kept saying Tyler. And I just like, when I'm on tour, like sometimes I'll go other than seeing my family, like I'll go months and months without someone calling me Tyler. And you know, like my girlfriend, her family, all of them call me Telly. Like all my friends that I've met since 2007 know me as Telly, which is the majority of people in my life. So like my mom would be saying Tyler and I wouldn't answer and she's like Telly. And then I looked and she literally looked like she wanted to cry because she was like, I can't even call you by your name anymore. And I was like, all right, mom. I was like, I'll try to keep it in the back of my mind to always assume that Tyler is for me, but it's hard. It's hard to explain. Like when someone calls you something every day of your life for months, and then there's a few people that you see maybe two or three times a year that call you something else. It's kind of weird, you know. But some of my family has adopted Telly. Like one of my uncles he just calls me Telly now, and it's like, so it's like
I like it. I like the name. I think it's cool. I always and it's nice to have a little like identity outside of just being, especially when your last name's Smith, I guess.
Yeah.
It's like
my name.
How
is
many Tyler Smiths are there out there? A lot.
Like probably millions. If you were born in the mid 80s, there's a high probability that your name has Tyler in it at some some point. Yeah. So, but it's also cool because whenever I'm done, you know, with this and I want to just go revert to civilian life, I can drop off the face of the earth.
Oh, yeah. You can be totally anonymous.
Yeah.
Perfect. Yeah. Well, hopefully that doesn't happen anytime soon.
No, I hope not
and
as well.
And big things with the new record, Dark Matter, coming out soon. So, Dude, I'll let you go, man. But hey, thanks for jumping on the phone with me. All the best with your recovery, with your back, and with Colby, Jack, and Pamela. And I guess I'll see you at So What.
Yeah, I'll see you soon, bud.
All right, man. Hey, take care.
You too.
All right.
Later.
So there it is, my conversation with Tyler Telly Smith of The Word Alive. I mean, he is very lucky that he wasn't more seriously injured, you know, and it really makes me think too, you know, about all the times I've jumped into the crowd. I remember in Germany one time, you know, you're just feeling it. And I jumped right off the stage, probably 10-foot high stage over the barricade, and I smashed right into some girl and I broke her glasses, you know, and I paid for them. They were, God, the euro. It was really expensive. You know, I took responsibility for it, but I mean, just a pair of glasses, you know, if that's 400 or 500 euros, which is bad enough. But I mean, can you imagine if, you know, I did some real damage, you know, where she had to go to the hospital or somebody else did, or of course, if I did. So it does make you think about what we do. And I know this isn't going to slow him down, because that guy goes about as hard on stage as anybody, and he will be back. And I'm sure he'll think a little bit next time, but he'll never completely stop. I know him too well, and he's going to keep going hard. Next week, we will be back with an all-new episode. It's going to be a doozy. Yeah, so make sure you're subscribed, and we will see you next week. Thank you very, very much. I'm going to leave you with my personal favorite The Word Alive song. Here is Play the Victim on Lead Singer Syndrome. Peace and love.